Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Paddle Pod, your weekly podcast covering professional paddle presented by Hugin Gons. We're on to episode 77, and as always, joined by my co-host Hugo here today. Hugo, it's great to have you on. How are you doing?
That's a great number, isn't it? 77. Always there of those kind of nice and not round numbers, but even numbers, if you can call it that. I'm very well, thanks, Gons. Yeah, I mean, as you know, I had a big weekend in London, just seeing some of, well, my best mates, given that I lived in London not long ago and you did as well, as we probably shared throughout some of our previous episodes. Now that we're back in Madrid, we can't say that we miss the weather, and we probably don't miss the food, apart from Nando's, to be honest. But yeah, just managed to catch some of the paddle, obviously, given that it was the big Mexico major. And yeah, overall, not a bad weekend. How was yours?
Yeah, mine was probably a bit more chiller than yours. I managed to play some paddle, which was nice. But I also think that we kind of have to take a moment here, Hugo, because I'm sure you realize it's not only episode 77, but we've officially hit 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel, which is absolutely massive. Now, because we're still in the full swing of the season, ending the season, we probably won't do anything just yet. But I feel like after the season ends, when we have a bit more time, we should do like a special video or something. So yeah, I mean, just want to take a moment to say thank you to everyone that's been following us, that's been engaging with our content. I mean, we love to hear your thoughts and see all the support that we get. So much appreciated. And we can't wait for the next 1,000.
100%. I mean, 1,000, I'd go for 10,000. I genuinely think we can hit it. I mean, I'm, yeah, just so grateful to our fan base, our followers, our listeners, our viewers, everyone really. Because, I mean, that's what keeps us going. Gons and I love chatting about paddle, but we could do it offline. And we're just very happy that you guys enjoy it. You guys find it useful, at least funny. So we're going to keep it going as long as you guys, well, keep interacting. And yeah, I mean, we'll definitely have a couple of, at least one special video. We still don't know what the nature of it will be, but we'll share accordingly as soon as the season's over, given that, well, there's only two tournaments left. So it makes sense to just keep in the swing of things. And there's a lot of off season in paddle, as we all know. So yeah, looking forward to that. And yeah, just looking forward to next year and the coming months. Hopefully we'll have a couple of exciting guests to announce soon. So yeah, guys, great things to come. And once again, thank you so much for all your support, sorry, because we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and maybe now we can get started with the actual episode itself. As Hugo, you briefly mentioned, the Mexico major has just passed. And I don't know what you think, but it almost feels like the last couple of weeks have been kind of, each tournament has been getting better and better. I don't know why. Every time I've been watching these last tournaments, I feel like the level has gotten so much better and there's been incredible matches. And it feels kind of weird because normally by the end of the season, players are knackered, results, you know, there's nothing really to play for, so kind of tournaments are a bit dull. But I must say, I was really pleased with just level in general of the Mexico major, and we had some outstanding matches. However, we still have one pair winning it all, and of course that was none other than Coello and Tapia, who beat once again finalists Mike Yanguas and Stupa, who had, I think, another sensational tournament. They beat them in three sets. So first set actually won by Stupa and Yanguas. So 6-4 and then 6-1, 6-2 by Tapia and Coello, which kind of does suggest that maybe the last two sets were a bit of a thumping by Coello and Tapia. But to be honest, watching the match, it didn't necessarily feel like that. I felt like Stupa and Yanguas just held on kind of well. I think that they still, you know, kept games fairly tight going into, you know, 30-all all of the and 40-all and deuce. But at the end of the day, Tapia and Coello prevailed. I mean, in the first set, especially though, Stupa and Yanguas were sensational. I felt like their tactic of kind of playing more chiquitas, especially in that first game, which is where they broke, I felt like that took Coello and Tapia by surprise. Tapia especially started off very unlike him. He missed a lot of smashes, had a lot of unforced errors, kind of that you're not accustomed to seeing from Tapia. But Kind of towards the end of the first set and beginning of the second set, he kind of switched on. And I mean, he just basically took over at the end. He was the MVP of the final with a plus 26 contribution score. So I mean, that's a pretty good number. And Goya also had a pretty decent performance with a plus 20 contribution score, and 23 winners with five unforced errors. But I mean, to me, the highlight of the final was, like I said, just Tapia being able to switch on. And as well, this is the tournament where actually the number ones have been officially confirmed. So Tapia and Coyo will end the year as the number one pair. I don't think that there's any surprise there. And it definitely seemed like it was heading in that direction. But I also kind of want to take this moment to congratulate Stupa Nyanguas, because even though the score might suggest towards the end that it was kind of over and they'd given up, but I thought that they had a sensational tournament. Once again, I think Nyanguas sometimes in the key moments could be a bit better, but this is just going to make him stronger, and it's going to make him a better player, all this experience that he's now racking up and being in finals. So overall, I think decent performance, and they're going from strength to strength, right? I mean, they played a sensational semi-final, which I'm sure we'll get into shortly, and now they managed to scrap a set from Coy and Tapia. So who knows, maybe the next one they'll be able to get there. But yeah, Hugo, what are your thoughts of the final?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I think the juiciest bits of this Mexico major were the semifinals, much like throughout some of the other tournaments, given that, well, as we've obviously shared and people know, a lot of the finals have been the same. And even though this final wasn't the same, because as you said, Yanguas and Stuba managed to beat Chingalan once again, second time in a row, and make the final, I wouldn't say that it was the highlight of the tournament. I do want to take the chance, and as you said, to congratulate Coy and Tapia for confirming their number one spot for a second season in a row. There's not a lot of pairs that can say that. Probably you can probably count them with maybe two hands, no more than that. And yeah, I mean, looking back actually at the start of the season when we made our predictions, I'm very happy to see that Coy and Tapia, well, I was right in saying that they were going to keep it. I think you went for LeBron and Galan, which would actually be so interesting to know what would have happened if they'd stuck together. Because from a performance perspective, you could very easily have seen them, well, stealing the number one spot and getting back to the top of the rankings. Now, who knows? Because Coy and Tapia have been pretty much untouchable. But I remember when you made that prediction, I was actually really nervous. I was like, I really don't know who to bet on. And after the first tournament of the season, when LeBron and Galan beat Coy and Tapia in the final in Saudi, if I'm not mistaken,
I was so happy back then.
I was getting pretty nervous. So yeah, but
But
yeah.
it lasted about a month, basically.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? But yeah, I mean, things have happened, and obviously LeBron and Galan, as we know, are no longer a thing. Who knows whether they might be back in the future. I'd actually say that things and well, the current dominance of Tapia and Goyo could push them to do it, but hey, we'll see. But yeah, well, credit where credit's due. Goyo and Tapia have massively deserved it. So yeah, I mean, moving on to the final, I just think Tapia showed why he's the best player in the world. I mean, we've constantly expressed how Galan throughout, well, from last June or July until probably about the same time this year, he was untouchable. He's probably reached the highest peak of the game that we've ever seen. But I think Tapia's consistency has been incredible. I mean, probably only been able to say that he's had a bad game in like three or four matches throughout the past 4 years. I mean, we were talking, well, 2 or 3 years. We were talking, I mean, God, you said that at the start of the final, he was pretty inconsistent. And then he walks away with 31 winners and 12 unforced errors. It's just baffling. And Coelho, I mean, just, well, Mr. Consistency himself as well. Five unforced errors for a player that takes so many risks and pushes forward so much and, wants to go there and have those net battles, et cetera, is amazing. Now, one stat that I was really impressed about from the final is that Yanguas and Stolpa had the same amount of winners, the same amount of unforced errors, and they played the same percentage of balls, 50% each way. So, I mean, honestly, I don't think none of them are to blame more than the other one, obviously.
And it's a good way to put it.
Exactly. I mean, I just think, yeah, Koya and Tabia just demonstrated that they're still a level above, but not just a level above Stupa and Yanguas, just a level above everyone else. So, as you say, I mean, Stupa and Yanguas have been sensational throughout the week. And even though Yanguas is still struggling, I think his head is letting him down in some key moments during matches. We've seen it. Well, we saw it at the World Cup. We saw it a couple of weeks ago when they lost to Goyan Tapia in the final as well. So I still think we're seeing that, but he's super young. I mean, he's 21 or 22, so it's normal. And the fact that he's, well, I think he's really managing to create uncertainty across rivals. I really think that Chingoto and Galan were getting really frustrated in that semi-final because they weren't being able to kind of damage Yanguas and find gaps in his game. And, well, he was just defensively, he was a wall. And then offensively, he's just got so many different things going for him. He's so tall. He's really aggressive at the net now. His bibora and even his smash has improved a lot. So he's just got everything, really. So, I mean, it's really exciting to see where he's going to go and what his ceiling is, really. So, yeah, I mean, Gonz, unless you have anything else to share on the final, I think I'd probably move on to the semifinals.
Yeah, let's go.
Nice. So maybe we can kick off, given that we were talking about Stupa Yanguas with that semi-final against Xingalan, because, I mean, it's probably the juiciest one of all of them. I'd probably say that the other semi-final was more even. I mean, it was definitely more even. I don't think many of us and our viewers won't disagree. But I particularly enjoyed this semi-final because of their recent history. Now, I think my overall summary would be that Stupa Yanguas have definitely got into Chingoto and Galan's heads, and they're now really, basically, they're leading Chingoto and Galan to make wrong decisions and irrational decisions. Now, Gonz, we were talking about this offline, right? I mean, Galan throughout the match, he was actually, I mean, his stats are pretty amazing, pretty impressive. 33 winners, 17 unforced errors. So, I mean, the enforced error count is relatively high, but I mean, if you're generating almost twice as many winners, fair enough. Chingoto's stats aren't good. I mean, not as good, obviously, 12 winners, 9 unforced errors, but they're not bad. But I just think that Galan was, well, playing 2 or 3 points really well, and then suddenly he'd make 1 or 2 really bad decisions or 1 or 2 really surprising mistakes that you wouldn't expect from him. And I think that's all down to the fact that they've realized, or Stupa Yanguas have basically made themselves like their, in Spanish you say the bestia negra, it's like their black beast, because it's like the pair that they're struggling against the most beyond Goyan Dabia, obviously. So yeah, I mean, I just think throughout the semi-final, it was all very even. I mean, the difference in points was, the total points was 11 points difference across both pairs. But it just, you just kind of felt throughout that Stupa and Yanguas were way more comfortable on the court. Well, we saw Jorge Martinez throughout the match saying that all their game style is playing a lob and coming up to the net tight and going to the, you know, to volley and to that kind of net battle. But I would actually disagree quite a lot with Jorge Martinez. I thought Stupa and Yanguas were doing all sorts of things. I mean, I thought they were playing chiquitas really well. I thought that they were changing it up across kind of slow play and slow biboras and bandejas to going for smashes and aggressive attacking plays. So it was a tough game for Xingalan, and I just don't think they were up for it. Whether that's because they've lost a little bit of ambition based on the fact that they've lost the number one kind of race against Goyan Tapia, that may be the case. I don't think Galan's injury is anything to do with it, because he seemed to be absolutely fine on court. But yeah, I mean, hey, this could really start kind of shaping things up for next season, and it could start casting some doubts on Xingalan as a pair. I don't know what you think, Gonz.
So on the semi itself, I mean, incredible level from Stupa and Yanguas. I thought that Stupa in particular was the MVP for me. And I mean, I think probably the best game of the year that he's played. I thought that The rouleau was amazing, to be honest. I think I haven't seen his rouleau pay off so much in a single game. I mean, it's kind of felt like this year the rouleau, which obviously it's one of his favorite shot, if it's not his favorite shot, hasn't really paid off. But in this particular match, I mean, it was absolutely amazing. He was able to generate so many winners with him, or like the shot after would be an easy shot for him to smash. And even something as well that he does, which I love, is the fact that he uses the exact same grip for a rouleau and a por tres. So a lot of the times the player can't anticipate if he's actually going to play the rouleau or play a por tres. And he caught Galan out so many times where Galan's thinking like, okay, he's just going to play a rouleau. And then all of a sudden he plays a por tres and it goes out and Galan just doesn't have the time because he to get out of the court because he didn't anticipate it. So, I mean, absolutely brilliant. And Yanguas as well. I mean, some of the defending from both of them and from Yanguas, some of the blocks from Yanguas, I mean, just absolutely amazing. I mean, he's getting thrown bombs, and I don't know how he just sticks out his racket and manages to block an insane shot, and it just falls perfectly. So incredible performance by them. And as you mentioned, it does seem like they've kind of figured out a way to beat them. And I think mainly this comes down to playing a lob to Chingoto and then Yanguas going up to block him because he does it so well, probably one of the best blockers on tour. And Chingoto, the problem is when he plays a very just always the same Bibora, I feel like he doesn't switch his Bibora a lot. It's just the Bibora that goes really fast, has a lot of spin, but it basically goes to Yanguas's like body. He doesn't have a lot of placement in terms of playing, let's say, a slower ball, but to the fence where maybe he would need to drag Yanguas out or even to the middle. I just don't see a lot of variation to his Bibora. So you have with, I think, a high degree of certainty when you lob Chingoto what shot he's going to play. And Yanguas is already there. He also doesn't play a lot of Biboras down the line to Stupa. So it just felt like, honestly, the way Yanguas and Stupa would gain control of the point was play a lob to Chingoto, Yanguas goes up to the net, maybe Stupa stays back. They weren't always like exactly going up at the same time, but that didn't really matter. And then once Yanguas had a good block, then Stupa would come and they would essentially be at the net and ready to finish the point or just play more aggressive from there or be on the front foot of the point. So that's kind of what I felt they've done from a tactical point of view. Obviously, you still have to play amazing. And kind of, I think you alluded to this, but it's funny because the actual stats from Chingalan aren't terrible. And the match suggests, both by the score and the number of points each pair won, that it was a fairly close match. But the reality is, and the feeling was on court, was that Chingalan were always on the back foot. Always. I never felt like they were going to take over the game and win it. And I think that's also due to the fact that Galan, again, was showing a lot of signs of frustration. And as you mentioned, he combined moments where, you do two incredible smashes, but then a really silly unforced error. And again, you can kind of see him in the benches, I think, asking more of Chingoto. So I'm not sure if the dynamic there now is Galan essentially feeling a bit helpless, especially on the offensive side. That's kind of my feeling. I think he's essentially having to, or the way for them to win these kind of big matches is for him to go off like, he did at the beginning of the season, but he's not at that level. And the fact that he's not getting a lot of help from Chingoto offensively, I think kind of frustrates him. And then he kind of loses a bit of confidence. And it just goes into a bit of a vicious cycle. So, I mean, it's a bit concerning. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, Hugo, because obviously you've been quite, I think, vocal about the fact that if Chingalan don't end the season well, and now realistically, I mean, they haven't won a tournament since July, and they've obviously, broken their streaks of going to consecutive finals. And yeah, I mean, I guess what are your thoughts if Chingalan continued down this path, do you see a breakup coming for the upcoming season?
I mean, it's a tough question. And well, I mean, I'd start off by saying that even though they haven't won a tournament since July, I mean, they've made pretty much every final, bar the last couple of tournaments and maybe one other. So Actually, no, just the last couple of tournaments, right? So, I mean, it's not like, I mean, they've only lost to two pairs all season, being Goyeon Dabia and then Stupan Yanguas now twice in a row. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's catastrophical, but the bigger issue for me is that I get the feeling that Galan is or could start thinking more and more, hey, I mean, I'm playing against Goyeon Dabia, who can both generate 20 plus winners in the match. And I'm playing against Stupan Yanguas, who are now working really well as a pair, and they can both generate 20 plus winners in a match. And I just don't know whether Chingoto can do that. And to be honest, I don't think he's done it throughout the season. I mean, he's obviously had better stats than throughout the semi-final, because maybe he'd generate 12 winners, but he'd have like three or four unforced errors. So obviously that's significantly better. But I don't think his winner count was much bigger. It was just that Galan was maybe generating 40 winners and having even fewer unforced errors. Now, Galan's probably thinking, I can't play as well as I've played throughout 12 months up until July forever, because that's practically impossible. I mean, that's the best we've seen any player play pretty much. So he might be looking elsewhere, or I think he could start getting interested in looking elsewhere in terms of players that can actually help him from an attacking perspective, because, I mean, I think it's worrying. Now, the other side of the story is, who does he go with? Because if Stupan Yanguas are doing really well together, and I mean, based on the last couple of tournaments, they'll probably stick, because why would you change things? I mean, they're only losing to the best pair in the world. Then, and obviously Goyeon Dabia are going to stick unless something very strange happens. Then where do you look? I mean, I don't think he'll go with Lebron because of, well, their history, and it's probably too early. And do you take a risk and go with Dineno, who actually this week had an unbelievable performance in the semifinals, generated about twice as many winners as Chingoto generated in this semifinal, but actually throughout the whole season, he's been significantly poorer in terms of form than Chingoto. I mean, this has probably been the only tournament where he's been better than Chingoto. So do you take that risk for a player that's actually quite similar to Chingoto in terms of playing style, etc.? Probably not. And then if you go beyond that, I think everything's a massive risk. So I just don't think he has that many great options. Now, I'm more inclined to think, hey, we've had a great season, or let's stick together for 2025, even if we don't win in the next couple of weeks, unless, you know, they have an absolute stinker and they lose in the first round in the next tournament, or against a lower ranked pair. And again, in the finals, they don't perform well. Hey, Galan might start thinking differently, or even Chingoto, but I just think they'll probably both think, let's stick together for 2025, see how we kick off. And if suddenly, for some reason, Galan, because I think Galan's the key here. I mean, I think Chingoto's pretty well, knows very well that Galan's the best player that he's ever going to be able to play with. He might have the opportunity to play with Dabia at some point in the future, but they're the two best two players in the world from a backhand perspective. So he's, you know, I don't think he can have an improvement. But from Galan's side, he might think, if there's pair changes in the future, you know, towards the start or the middle of 2025, then that might be a better moment to split. I don't know what you think, Gons.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. Just wanted to throw the question out there and, you know, cause a little bit of chaos. But to me, ultimately, there's just not a lot of options out there that are better than Chingoto. But I think I completely agree with your analysis. At the end of the day, Galan probably needs someone that gives him a bit more offensively. And, you know, could this be Chingoto at the beginning, or, you know, next year, once maybe he's had a full preseason? And let's just say that in the preseason, he like focuses fully on improving his like offensive game, his smash. I mean, we've seen players develop certain shots, right? I mean, Dineno had quite a big change, I thought, when he then joined with Stupa. Like, offensively, he was generating a lot more winners than we'd seen in the past. Yanguas, I would say, arguably this season, I think his smash has improved a lot, and now it's like a genuine real weapon. So I don't necessarily, or what I'm trying to say is, I can definitely see a player such as Chingoto, you know, who's really hardworking and stuff, like really focusing on things and potentially improving. And if I'm Galan, I definitely would give Chingoto this chance, because, as you say, I mean, there's just not a lot of options out there for him realistically right now. I mean, the one that just comes like straight to mind that could make him you know, that they could challenge is Yanguas, right? It's I think that maybe that might be a bit more realistic than Leon right now. And if Yanguas gets a call from Galan, you know, could be quite tempting, but at the same time, it's doing quite well with Stupa right now. I don't know if he would want to change like straight away. So it just, there's not a lot of options out there for Galan. And, you know, at the end of the day, they've had a fantastic season. I think that when they look back at this year, you know, when the season ends, I think that it should all be positives and with some clear kind of working or clear things to improve on, which in a way is also good, right? Like when you have certainty of what's gone wrong, then you can easily propose a solution and work to get that solution. So, I mean, I'd be very, very, very surprised that if they split and they don't start the year together.
I agree. And actually, I mean, looking back at this semi-final between Cingalan and Stupa and Yanguas, I actually felt that one of the reasons, if not the key reason why they didn't win, wasn't actually because Chingota didn't generate enough winners. I thought Galan was just showing signs of frustration, and that was leading him to make irrational decisions throughout some of the key points. Sometimes I think he was smashing too much, and I don't think he needs to smash that much. I mean, his Bibora is unbelievable. He's got, well, his volleying is probably the best volley in the world. And I think sometimes he abuses the smash. I think sometimes he tries to finish the point too quickly. He's got an absolute wall next to him in Chingoto, who can just go on and on and on throughout the point. And that's probably one of his best attributes. So why not make the points a little bit longer? I just felt that that didn't happen in the semi-final, and that has to be part of their game style. There was a point throughout the semi-final where Chingoto just started to play really high lobs, and they were actually working really well. Why not stick to that, make the points long, and maybe get a little bit into Yanguas and Stupa's heads? That's kind of my suggestion, and I think that could be something that they look at going forward if they have to stick together. Well, if they stick together, which I think they will. Now, I do agree with what you're saying. Chingoto could work on his attacking game a lot throughout preseason and suddenly change the way he plays. We've seen Dineno do that. I mean, I'd say Chingoto has obviously the handicap that he is pretty short, one of the shortest players out of the top players. So I don't know how good his smash can get based simply on his height. But there's a lot of other ways to kind of improve your attack, right? Just be more aggressive with the volleys, change up your reward, which, as you said, you've alluded to that. And I think that's key. Actually, in that cross-court battle with Cuello throughout the whole season, what was really hurting Cuello, or what hurt him a lot, was those biboras and ganchos to the fence. Because the issue is that as a forehand player, I'm talking about Yanguas, it's very natural to block shots on your backhand. And because Chingoto's always hitting them to that kind of position and that area, Yanguas is very comfortable. Now, if you go for the fence or even to the forehand angle of Yanguas, I think that's much harder. And that could be one of the ways they get into them. But yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. I think, as you say, Yanguas is the only real option for Galan, really, in terms of how he could improve Chingoto, well, how he could improve his current partnership, at least based on current form. But it would be a big decision from Yanguas to drop Stupa, having dropped Garrido previously when he was doing really well. Dropping Stupa when he's doing really well could be big. At the same time, if you get a call from Galan, a next number one, and, well, until very recently, the best player in the world, can you say no? I mean, would you say no if you were Yanguas? Because I'd probably say yes.
I mean, I'd probably say yes. And if we just look at the precedent of him leaving Garrido and going with Stupa, now it's fair to say that. I mean, it's gone well. It was the right decision. So, you know, if you just follow that logic, then yeah, you'd have to say yes.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just simply comparing Galan to Stupa, to be honest.
Exactly, yeah.
So
no doubt there.
Exactly. But yeah, I guess we'll see. And maybe we should move on to the other semi-final, because that was very, very juicy as well. So yeah, I mean, as you all know, the other semi-final was Coelho and Tapia against Lebrón and Dineno, who are rumoured to have already split looking to next season. So this sometimes helps pairs towards the end of the season when they've already announced that, well, they already know that they're splitting and it's one of their last tournaments. They kind of play with a little bit less pressure. And we've seen how, for example, Paquito and Chingoto won the last tournament of the season last season, knowing that they weren't going to continue together. Now, unfortunately, this wasn't the case this week for LeBron and Dineno, but they did, well, I'd say it was one of their best performances as a pair, if not the best. The score in the semifinal against Guayón Tapia was 6-3, 3-6, 7-6. So, I mean, as even as it gets. And I'd say both of them were sensational, both LeBron and Dineno. And we can move on to Tapia and Guayón later on. But I'd say that Dineno in particular completely turned around his momentum throughout the last 3 or 4 months. I mean, 24 winners is for a player like Dineno, who has been very conservative, who isn't aggressive by nature, who hasn't been smashing as much, at least this year, is really impressive. And yeah, I mean, LeBron with 39 winners, that's probably his highest winner count all season. So they should both be super, super happy. It's just that they faced the two best players in the world. And when it really matters, when it came down to the deciding tiebreak of the third set, Guayón Tapia did what they do best, which is, making the right decisions, I'd say. I think that's what Guayón Tapia are, at least a level, if not two, above all other players on tour. They just know what to do and play the same way, no matter whether it's a key point or not. I don't know what you think, Gons.
Yeah, I mean, I think apart from the fact that, you know, they've got every single shot and arguably all their shots are the best shots out there on tour, that level extra that I think gives them the edge above the rest is how they play those key points and how good they are in the most important moments. I mean, how many times have we seen stats from Guayón Tapia where, I don't know, they have like 4 break points and they convert all of them, and the opposition have like, you know, 3 break points, they convert none, or even more, like 8 break points, they convert, you know, 1 or 2. And actually, funnily enough, now that I say this, this match was actually kind of the opposite, which is maybe what brought LeBron and Dineno so close, because Tapia and Guayón actually generated 7 break points, but they only managed to convert 2, whereas LeBron and Dineno generated 3 and they actually converted 2 of them. So much more efficient this time from LeBron and Dineno. But at the end of the day, in that final tiebreak, I mean, Tapia and Guayón were sensational. I mean, they got a very comfortable lead early. And they finished that quite easily, the tiebreak in the end. And talking about Dineno, which for me, one of the main highlights, I think, of this match, just comparing quickly the stats with him and Tapia, because it's actually quite funny. I don't think we've ever seen something like this. So Dineno generated 24 winners, Tapia 22. Dineno had 5 unforced errors, Tapia 9. Dineno had 9 forced errors, Tapia had 9 forced errors as well. Dineno had 8 assists and Tapia had 5 assists. And Dineno had 12 out of 18 smashes, or won 12 out of 18 smashes, where Tapia only 6 out of 14. So, I mean, kind of crazy. I don't think we've ever seen Dineno outperform Tapia like that. And by any means, I mean, Tapia's stats aren't bad. So I think that just tells you how good Dineno was and the level. By far, I mean, the best game that he's had all year, at least in my opinion. And it could be really interesting now, as you said. I wonder if this is kind of an effect of LeBron telling Dineno, you know, like, thank you for everything, but won't be by your side next year, and kind of all the pressure's off. At the same time, I wonder if maybe this could, you know, get LeBron thinking, did I make the right decision? Should I backtrack? I mean, it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on that, Hugo.
I mean, I'm sure they're both thinking that based on this semifinal performance, but I still want to go back to what we, I think, both said last week when we spoke about LeBron's, rumored partnership with Osborne for 2025. I think LeBron is more of a differential on the forehand side, because the fact that he can be as good on the forehand or even better than he is on the backhand and generate that amount of winners is something that basically no other players can do beyond, I'd say, beyond Coello and Yanguas. I mean, we know that Chingo and Dineno are the other two best forehand players, the other two forehand players that make the top five, but their game style is different. Now, obviously, Dineno has had an unbelievable semi-final this week. And it is true that throughout last season, when he reached the peak of his game with Stupa and they fought for the number one spot against Coello and Tapia, he did generate a lot of winners. So I wonder whether he'll now be able to turn around and start being as aggressive and as efficient as he was. But just generally, he's not that type of player. So I still think that LeBron, if he has the right backhand player next to him, and I just don't know whether that's Charles Waterhead, but I think that he can be I think he has more chances to reach the top of the rankings if he plays on the forehand side, because he has better options to pair up with. That's my thought right now. I mean, obviously, the initial and the main player that comes to mind is Galán because of how well they did together. But I just genuinely think that he is still better on the forehand. I've seen better things from LeBron on the forehand. Now, this ultra-attacking version of LeBron on the backhand is very impressive, and he's obviously that good that he can play on both sides. But what's been pretty clear is that even when he generates 39 winners, they still don't win the match. Why is that? Well, because he generates 21 unforced errors, which is pretty high. And also because ultimately his forehand player, not in this semi-final, but when he's been with Ineno, just doesn't generate enough attacking results. So that's my analysis. And well, from your reactions, I think you agree.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, ultimately, I just think that this match was maybe a one-off from Dineno. Not a one-off in terms of he's never going to produce this sort of performance again, but more like in terms of this season and maybe what you would kind of expect for him. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever reach kind of how he was with Stupa, because that was like truly unbelievable. But I also don't think that I definitely think that he can be better than he has been this season, and he's a better player, I think, than what he's shown this season. So I think he's kind of, his natural level would be sort of in between kind of what he had and how he performed individually with Stupa, which at some points, arguably, he could have been the best player in the world. Like, generally, there was a phase like where Stupa and him were winning everything, and he was even, I'd say, better than Stupa. So that kind of between, you know, that feels like a more realistic level for Dineno. So this kind of performance to me seems more of an outlier. And then on LeBron's side, I mean, I think you clearly highlighted he's generating a lot of winners, but something that we've seen as well with his return to the backhand is that he's generating a lot of unforced errors. And to face the number ones, you can't just have these many unforced errors, no matter how, you know, many winners you can also generate. And that's because he's taking a lot of risks. I do think that sometimes he abuses the smash a lot. If I'm not mistaken, actually, we did an episode kind of towards the end of or towards the summer where we one of the stats, I think we were talking about players, and we said that LeBron on the forehand side was like within the top 10 smashers on as players or something like that, but his efficiency was not good. And I mean, he in general, like on the left side as well, he just loves to smash. I mean, 50 smash attempts from him, and you know, he is a good smasher, but just sometimes I think that he could probably take another decision, and that's probably what leads to so many of these kind of errors. But yeah, I mean, nonetheless, good performance from them, and we'll see how they finish the season. But it does feel that if LeBron wants to challenge again, kind of moving back to the forehand and pairing with a top backhand player could probably, or is probably the right formula to face, you know, Coello Tapia, who were just able to generate winners so easily.
Yeah, I mean, I think the following stat reflects what we've just said to perfection. Tapia and Coello's unforced error count in that semifinal, the total for both of them was 17. And LeBron had 21. So by himself, he had more unforced errors than Kwayo and Dabia had together. Now, I know you're comparing him to the best player in the world, but that's LeBron's ambition. That's the reason why he's rumored to be going back to the forehand and pairing up with Alsvoreld. And that's the reason why he's clearly not satisfied with sitting at the, well, being ranked third or who knows, fourth, if Stupaniangwas keep doing as well. And they could easily challenge for that third spot as well. But LeBron's not happy sitting in the top four, well above the rest, because genuinely, I mean, I think these four pairs that we've mentioned today are miles above the rest. But he's not happy with that. He wants to try to challenge the number ones. And I think if that's his aim, this partnership, unless suddenly this momentum continues and the next two tournaments are the same from both of them, Dineno plays that way as well, keeps generating that amount of winners and moves that way into 2025. Unless that happens, I just don't see this being a viable way of reaching the number one spot. I don't know whether Alsvoreld will be the way, but I just think that he's right in trying something different, because he's had enough time to see kind of what these encounters against Kwayo and Dabia are like. Not as much against Shingaland, to be honest, because they have only faced them once. But hey, we're actually going to be able to watch them against Shingaland, hopefully, if things go as expected, this week, right? In Dubai, if I'm not mistaken?
In Milan.
Sorry, Milan. Yeah, so a bit strange that actually after a major, the last tournament before the tour finals is a P1, so going down level. But yeah, as you said, the Milan P1 starts today, Monday. I mean, the pre-rounds must have started yesterday, the day before. But yeah, finally, Kwayo and Dabia are on Stupaniangwas' side, which means that Shingaland and LeBron and Dineno could face each other in the semifinals. Now, that would be a hell of a way to end the year. I just really want to watch that match again, because based on Shingaland's current form and based on, well, LeBron and Dineno's performance this week and their general performance, I think that they could very much win that match. I don't know what you think, Gons.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a super interesting match, because the form that they're carrying, Shingaland, worst of the season, and you know, LeBron and Dineno just come off the back of arguably their best match, even though they lost of them as a pair. So it's going to be super interesting. Going to see as well how they play against Shingaland, if they kind of use similar tactics to what Stupa and Yangwas have done. And to be honest, I also think that other semi-final between Stupa and Yangwas and Dabia and Kwayo will be quite interesting, because, you know, it's a semi-final. There's not going to be as much pressure, I think, on Stupa and Yangwas. So maybe they play a bit more relaxed. They also, you know, Dabia and Kwayo, like, I mean, at some point, are they
done it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's literally nothing else to play for. Do you really want to win this Milan P1? I mean, come on, just take a couple of days off, give us a different final, and come back, relax for the Barcelona finals, and you can win that. But just leave us a new final. I mean, that I think could be a really interesting semi as well.
Definitely. So yeah, Gons, I think this is probably enough for today, right?
Yeah, I think we've covered everything. But yeah, please, everyone, leave your comments as usual. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the semis and what you think of Shingaland. Do you think that they'll stick for 2025, or Galan maybe looks elsewhere? And obviously for, you know, LeBron and Dineno, Stupa, Yangwas, like everything that we discussed, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Cheers, guys.